Veritex Community Bank Studios. ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 proudly present The Killer Bees.
Definitely a fan of The Killer Bees.
Now bringing you the fastest 3 hours in Houston sports radio. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
What up, H-Town? Hey, how we doing?
He's Joel. I am Jeremy. It is a Tuesday edition of The Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Boy, it's not good. It's not good for the Houston Astros. They fall to the Red Sox yesterday 12-3 and now trail the series 2-1, game 4 tonight right here on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5. Look, there's ebbs and flows a lot of times to a best-of-7 series. Right now, it is not looking good for the Astros. And the biggest problem, well, there's a lot of problems, but the biggest two problems I can point to, one, the starting pitching has been just atrocious. And it's surprising to me because they had really good starting pitching all season long. And then these games are over by the second or the third inning. Like, they're not even competitive after you get to the fourth or fifth inning.
It's a massive bummer, and it really does all start and end with the starting pitching, but also the offense has kind of gone dormant. I think some of it is because the wind gets ripped out of your sails when, you know, you take blows like that and get down by the numerous runs that they've gotten down in the last two games. The good news is it's just two games, and you know what? Whether there's no run differential anymore, so it doesn't matter if you lose by one or 51. You lost two games, and you did not do it in a pretty fashion, but you won the first game. And that sets you up to where if you just win one more, you're guaranteed at least one game back here at Minute Maid again, and you can try and elongate the series. Their best chance to win is tonight. I thought it all along because I didn't know what we were going to get out of Urquidy. But for some strange reason, I feel good about Zach Greinke.
I hope.
I just feel like I don't know how long I can feel good about Zach Greinke. Like, I don't know if he gets through 2-plus times of the lineup. But I do know that what I've seen of Zach Greinke in the playoffs previously gives me enough confidence to believe he's going to keep you in the ballgame. And as I've always said to you, he's going to pitch, not throw. So therefore, no matter what the count is and whether he's getting calls or not, it's not going to deter him from sticking with his game plan, which, as quirky as he is, his ability to kind of tune that kind of noise out and just do what he's supposed to do while he's out there gives me a bit of calm.
Yeah, maybe we underappreciated Zach Greinke. And we'll find out more after game 4. But the fact that he can be in that element, he's used to that environment, he's pitched big games in his career. We'll see what he can give the Astros today. And I don't even need him to go deep into the game. Like, just go 3 innings, 1 run, and I think you're okay. The Astros offense needs to have a big day like
three?
The Red Sox offense has had. I don't think he's going to go that long.
That would be an improvement from what they've gotten from their last two.
But I mean, how long can he go? He hasn't been stretched out in a while, hasn't thrown in a while.
But we don't know
that,
though,
Jeremy. You can go more than 3 innings.
But while he hasn't been pitching, we don't know what he's been doing on the side. He could be throwing 75 pitches. He could be trying to amp it up. Like Odorizzi said, he treated it like the All-Star break when he didn't make the divisional series round, and he kept throwing and throwing and throwing. Now, it was good enough to give you 4. Could he have done more? I don't know. We've seen over the year, even when he was stretched out, he wasn't going to give you much more than 4. But from Greinke's standpoint, and the easiest flashback is to go back to Game 7 against the Nationals and realize that, you know what, if he can control what he can control, he can keep you in the ballgame and be effective for hopefully 5, and then you can get, you know, gauge accordingly where you are after 5 innings. But if he can give you 5.
I think 5 is lofty.
But look at how many pitchers they've used the last two games, too.
See, we'll get into it a little bit more later. But I think Dusty actually did a pretty good job yesterday. I want to go back and look at Jose Urquidy, too, because Jose Urquidy hadn't pitched in 2 weeks. He went through the first inning, 1-2-3. He got the first guy in the second inning as well. He retired the first 4 guys that he faced. I'm like, okay, this is the Jose Urquidy we saw in the 2019 World Series that can be the calming presence to that pitching rotation. He gets in front of Verdugo, 0-2, and then he loses him. He walks him, and then after that, it was just everything hit the fan. J.D. Martinez, who was swinging a hot bat, he doubles. Hunter Renfroe walks, so now you have the bases loaded. You get ahead of the count 1-2 against Christian Vasquez, and then he singles to right field, scores a run. Christian Arroyo then reaches on a fielder's choice, which was that play by Jose Altuve, which, I mean, you get out of that. It should have been a double play ball.
And
look, I know it took like a weird hop. I thought it kind of handcuffed Altuve, too, where he tried to go with like the basket instead of flipping the glove over.
Yeah.
He flips the glove over. It's a double play. You're out of the inning. And as bad as Jose Urquidy was yesterday, he should have been out of the second by only giving up 1 run.
He definitely didn't follow the rule of glove up, excuse me, over the waist.
Yeah.
Glove down, you know, spoon, scoop. below the waist and handcuff the hell out of him. But even still, if it hits his body, he's still got a chance to turn two there. But I'm totally with you on that. The one thing that I didn't like was, and we were talking about this yesterday, as I said, look, Urquidy's really good about staying in the strike zone. And yesterday, he fell victim to exactly what Garcia and Fromber have done too. When they're not getting the calls they feel like they're supposed to get, instead of just going, okay, I've got to get into the zone a little bit and then start working my way back out nibbling, they kept doing what they figured they were supposed to do to paint the corners, weren't getting the calls, walks have been killing them. You look at the numbers in the series, and what is it, something like 15 of the 26 walks issued to the Red Sox in the playoffs have scored. Yeah, you can't walk these guys.
My overwhelming takeaway is that the Astros starting pitchers are scared of the Red Sox hitters. They're scared that they're going to get hit. And, I mean, you can understand the thought, right? Because the Red Sox offense has been knocking the cover off the baseball this entire playoff series and this entire ALCS. But you're seeing too much nibbling from these starters. Like, in every single count, like, it's the first pitch to a batter. They're pitching like they're up in the count 0-2, and they're trying their get-out pitch to get swings and misses. Like, you can't nibble. It's something we've seen from the Astros this entire series. It's why starters aren't going deep into this game. Like, you have to understand you're going to get hit by the Red Sox. You have to understand that they're going to score on you, that they're going to get a few. But it's the walks that compound everything
for the
Astros.
Well, look at
it, Jeremy.
You set a record for grand slams. You know why they're grand slams? Because you loaded the bases.
Yep.
You know how you loaded the bases? Because you kept walking guys. It wasn't like you were getting slapped all over the ball yard. For the most part, you set up your own fate in a lot of ways in all three of the grand slams by continually not finding the strike zone. That's a massive problem.
Too much nibbling for sure. But here was the straw that broke the camel's back. Another grand slam by the Red Sox.
He kicks and he delivers. Swing. There's a long drive to right field. Deep toward the grandstand. Tucker looking up. It is gone into the grandstand. Grand slam, Kyle Schwarber. 6-0 Red Sox. Can you believe it?
WEEI had the call. Grade the call. That's what we do around here.
7-6. First of all, his pipes are terrible.
He said grandstand too many times, too.
He also sounds like, who's the guy they have on Get Up that's the field reporter for the NFL?
I don't watch that show.
He's on right now. Dan Graziano. It sounded like Dan Graziano trying to do play-by-play. At least when there's certain people you don't have to because you have natural bass in your voice. He's already kind of tinny, and then he's talking about the grandstand, and it's a bit much for me. Sounds like Abner Doubleday.
It's perfect for Boston. And the Red Sox take the 6-0 lead there. Jose Urquidy would allow a single to Kike. Devers flew out, then another single to Bogarts, and that was the end of the day for Jose Urquidy. Not the start that the Astros needed. They trail in the series 2-1. And like you were saying, Joel, here's Dusty Baker after the game saying, we got to stop walking, guys.
You know, this team was similar to the A's in our division. You know, if you can make them earn it and stop from walking them, we're pitching from behind, most of the night. And, we just got to, we got to cut our walks down, you know what I mean? And, a lot of their runs in the whole postseason, a whole bunch of them are preceded by a walk. And that one inning, when they got to 6 runs, they had 2 walks there, to load the bases. And so we just got to, we got to cut down their walks and make them earn it.
So that was Dusty Baker after the game, preaching basically what you're preaching. Can't compound the big innings with the walks. And again, I think the Astros are so scared, their starting pitchers are scared of this Red Sox lineup, that they're trying to make the perfect pitch in every single situation, every single count. Like, first pitches to Bogart, you're looking at like 1-2 breaking balls that aren't even competitive, that are out of the zone completely. And I just feel like you have to stop nibbling in the series. Like, hey, they're going to score. They're a good offense. They're going to score.
Yeah,
but
so
allow
you.
Your offense a chance to be in the game.
So are you, if you get the chance, right? Because even though you've gotten blown out of the last 2 games, you had some big hits. You did put runs on the board. But you bring up an excellent point that I noticed throughout the game. Competitive strikes, competitive balls are a thing, too. Urquidy, when he was missing, from the time it left his hand, the hitter knew, that's not going to be a strike. I don't even have to look at potentially offering at it, as opposed to the best misses look like they're going to be strikes. He didn't do any of that last night. He had nothing, whether you call it rust because he hadn't pitched in so long or whatever you want to blame it on. He did not have his A stuff or B stuff, and what they did see of stuff, they hammered the hell out of it because he was nitpicky.
I think he got to the point in that second inning where he didn't trust that breaking ball. He was scared of leaving it over the zone, and that's why you didn't see that breaking ball be anywhere near the zone for the rest of that second inning. And a lot of them, I mean, were first pitches. So all of a sudden, you're behind in the count 1-0. I think that's something that actually plays into the advantage of Zach Greinke, because I don't think he's going to pitch that way. He's never pitched that way in his entire career. Now, you went into the game yesterday saying, Urquidy's got to give you innings. He's got to give you length. He's got to save the bullpen that was just demoralized in game two as well. He didn't do that. I feel like Dusty Baker did a really good job of mopping the game up, though. Yimi Garcia, an inning and a third. Taylor, an inning. Who cares? Bruce Raley, inning and two-thirds. Who cares? Maton went an inning and a third. You can probably use him today. He only threw 12 pitches. Stanek, one inning. He only threw 14 pitches. So you have those guys available, I think. And then plus, you didn't use any of your dudes. Like, if you do go Zach Greinke today for three innings, say you follow him up with Christian Javier for three innings, that gets you to the seventh. And you have to figure that in a game like this, trailing 2-1 in the ALCS, you can get three innings from a combination of Graveman and Presley.
Yeah.
So I think Dusty did a really good job yesterday in what was a terrible situation.
Look, he has made some missteps throughout the season. We know him for sure.
Mm-hmm.
But in the playoffs, he's made minimal missteps. And the buttons that he's pushed with the bullpen, for the most part, as you mentioned, have worked out. Sure, there were a couple of home runs given up after Urquidy exited, but we know for all intent and purposes, it was over, okay? So what they needed to do was make sure that they ate up as much innings as many pitches as they possibly could, just so that they could salvage a chance in the last two games of not just being completely drained out of any gas left in the tank. He did all those things. I mean, the fact that your Daily Rayleigh, you know, wasn't there for a batter or three. He was there to make sure that he soaked up some of the damage, and he did. So they all did their job. Now, the offense has got to do their job again, because I think that they got caught up a little bit in the crowd and the hype and the mess, and I think that as much as we said, look, you could get beat by 10, you get beat by 1, you lost game 2, that's it, move on. There were remnants. You could tell the way they were going up there, they felt like they had to put up a crooked number, as opposed to, there's something to be said the first game on the road, if you send a message by being the first team to score. Because now the Red Sox realize right away, this isn't going to be the Astros of game 2. We got our hands full, as opposed to swinging at bad pitches, flailing away, letting Rodriguez get out of the first inning with minimal damage on pitches, and right into the second, where he was coasting, striking everybody out on three pitches because you were way overzealous in the box, instead of making him throw some strikes, possibly taking advantage of some counts. They didn't do any of those things, and they've got to get back to it, and you got to do it tonight, or you're going to be in a problematic situation where you basically are psychologically already taking yourself out of the series.
I'm not ready to quit on this team yet. I know a lot of people in this city are not.
Oh, there's some people with panic that decided to tweet about it. That wasn't too smart.
Panic, I mean, you can understand a little bit of panic being down 2-1, but certainly not dismissing the Astros' chances of winning this series. You win one today, you take the home field advantage back. You also have Fromber on the mound tomorrow. Like, you'd be 2-2 with your best pitcher, although he's not been very good in the playoffs, going tomorrow in Boston. Maybe you sneak away a couple of victories in Beantown, coming home just needing one. I'm not dismissing the Astros from this conversation just yet. 713-780-3776 if you want to get in. 713-780-ESPN. When we come back, Eduardo Rodriguez mocking Carlos Correa. How do we feel about it? And also, the Texans cutting Whitney Mercilus. What does it mean for the Houston Texans? Oh. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN.
I thought you could ask what it meant for Papa John's. All right, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at MyBookie. Look, if you're looking for a great place to put money down on the game tonight, or any game at any time, soccer, college football, pro football, baseball, you name it, they've got it. NBA starts tonight. I'm jazzed. And you can put money down on every single game you want at MyBookie. Go to MyBookie.ag right now. What you're going to find out is they got a promotion running that's going to benefit you. Oh, it's going to benefit you, all right, because it's going to double your next deposit, no matter what it is, up to $1,000. So if you're a new customer, an existing customer, you used to be a customer, just get into MyBookie.ag, put in the promo code BET975, and the next deposit you put in your account up to $1,000 is going to be doubled. Put $100 in. You got $200 in your account. You know what that means? More money in your account means more money you can use to bet on games, more chances to win, and then you get the cash. Because when you win and you want your money, they pay out too, and you can bet anytime, anywhere, any place. That means on your tablet, on your cell phone, on your laptop, in-game too. They have lots of in-game bets going at all times. If you want to hedge a bet or your initial bet isn't going well, you can get in on all those. They have prop bets going. It's the place to go to bet your money because your money's safe and secure. They'll double your next deposit, and when you win, they're going to pay. It's the only place I would ever recommend you to go put your money down. It's why most people at this station, that's where they put their money down, and you should too. Go to mybookie.ag, promo code BET975, and find out what we've already known. Bet anytime, anywhere, any place with MyBookie.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
All of the lights. Turn up the lights in here, baby. Extra bright, I want y'all to see this. Turn up the lights in here, baby. You know what I need, want you to see everything.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, so Eduardo Rodriguez, I wouldn't say that he dealt against the Astros. He did enough. I mean, once you have a 9-0 lead entering the fourth and a 6-0 lead entering the third, you can pitch with a little bit more confidence, right? But he pitched well. Look, he gave the Red Sox what they wanted. If you would have told Boston fans and Alex Cora, would you take Eduardo Rodriguez, 6 innings, 3 runs? Absolutely you would. Controversy, drama, if you want to call it that, in his final out of the game, he got Carlos Correa to ground out to second on a 107.3 exit velocity, by the way. And then he pointed to his wrist and said, it's my time, kind of mocking Carlos Correa. It wasn't kind of mocking. He was mocking Carlos Correa. Correa in this postseason has busted out a new move in which he points to his wrist, says, it's my time. And then Eduardo Rodriguez did it yesterday for his final out in the sixth inning against Carlos Correa. What'd you think of that move from Eduardo?
I mean, if you're an Astros fan, you're not supposed to like it. And really, the question becomes, did he do it to you? It's like the taunting rule in the NFL, right? Or in the NBA with Dikembe wagging the finger. If you do what you do, but it's pointed at your dugout, and you say what you say, and it's said to your team, was there really any damage done? Like, you took it personal. You got sensitive. I mean, the fact that Fox made such a big deal of the guy in the stands pointing to his watch when Correa struck out in the first inning, or second inning, whenever it was like, okay, really? Was it that big of a deal? It's like the fact that Fox keeps dwelling on the cheating scandal of the Astros, but won't mention the Red Sox and the fact that they may a couple years in a row have done some things that were against the rules, too.
Little East Coast bias, right?
Yeah. So if I'm an opponent, I can use that as billboard material. I can get kind of fired up about it. But it's just part of the game. I like the way Correa's handled everything this entire season and even in the playoffs. Because no matter what happens, nothing seems to get at him. And this is something, if you go back, and I assume we have the quote from him at some point, but you think about this when it was Bryce Harper.
Hey, my celebration.
That too. But when it was Bryce Harper, it was I think Trout was involved in a little bit, but it was the two guys leading the discussion were Bryce Harper and Correa that said, from wearing hats backwards to bat flips to putting some fun back in this baseball game that we play, they're all about it. They were wearing, you know, hats and everything that said, bring back the flip and let us play. There's nothing wrong with that. We're not trying to keep it super starched like it was in the 70s and 60s. And I know this will probably make Charlie roll over in his not yet made grave. But aside from baseball purists, the game needs more of that.
Yeah, it didn't bother me at all. I like the drama in sport. I like the trash talking in sport. I think it's fun. I don't think you throw 100-mile-per-hour fastballs at dudes' heads, which is not something we saw here. I thought the fan, you know, heckling Correa with the wrist thing, I thought that was hilarious. I was the guy calling for whoever was behind the White Sox dugout to be yelling slider, slider, slider at Tim Anderson. And Correa's response, I thought, was perfect to it as well.
Hitting my celebration, I thought it was kind of cool. It's just the way baseball should trend moving forward. You know, we talk about making baseball fun. We talk about baseball, you know, growing and more people coming to watch the sport. You know, you need things like that. You need to let the players have fun. And, you know, I loved it personally. I think the game should move in that direction where you can show emotions and you can be yourself and you can keep it real.
If you're going to cheer for Correa doing that, you can't jeer Eduardo Rodriguez for doing it right back at Correa. And Correa's flat out saying it. If I'm going to do it, he should do it right back to me. I think it is fun. I like seeing it from Correa. I like seeing it from Eduardo Rodriguez if I'm a neutral party.
I'll remind you of Trevor Bauer. I hate to bring up that name in any way, shape, or form. When Trevor Bauer was doing all of his hand gestures and all the things that he was doing at certain hitters, including Fernando Tatis Jr., when Tatis Jr. got him, he went right back at him with the same kind of gestures. Bauer said the same thing. Look, I don't mind it. I like it. Because you know what? It shows that there's the juices flowing. There's a competitive fire amongst the teams. And you know what? Whether people take it personally or not, I completely agree with you. Aside from headhunting and making it personal to the point of physical damage done to another player that could be career-threatening or season-threatening, there's nothing wrong with this. Look, how many times have we heard about the greatness of Michael Jordan and Larry Bird as trash talkers?
Exactly.
You know? It's been going on in the NBA forever. Okay, it goes on in the NFL all the time. And you know what? It makes the game better because there's more things to keep an eye on. There's more competitive juices flowing. I think I see nothing wrong with it.
Baseball purists have a way of sensationalizing things in baseball. Like, you get a hard slide at second. How dare that guy? That's Bush League. You get a couple of guys talking trash, and you talk about how cruel that is when it happens every single snap in the NFL. It happens every time up the court in the NBA. I like seeing that. 713-780-3776. Let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Rolando, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing today?
Doing all right.
What's up, man?
All right, hey, I want to talk about our lineup, not our lineup, our rotation. We need some pitchers, and we need it really, really, really bad. If we're going to sign Correa, we're going to have to let somebody go, and I'm choosing Bregman to go. He hasn't shown up for us for the past 2 years. Yeah, he's a hero here, kind of, I guess, sort of, but Correa would probably be a lot better. There's a lot of pitchers I was looking up on. That's going to be coming up on the free agency. Noah Syndergaard, Rodon, what's his name, Robbie Ray. There's a lot of good pitchers. And we're not going to sign Correa. We've got to at least bring two really good pitchers. And this is a message to Jim Crane. You got to spend money to make money, baby. Scared money don't make no money. Thank y'all. Have a great day.
Appreciate it, Rolando. Look, here's where I'm at on a lot of this, Jeremy. And you see a lot of this flying around on social media as well. And you need to slow your roll and you need to refresh in your memory banks. Not you, Rolando, because I appreciate you, you know, listening to the show and bringing some thoughts to it. But for all the people that want to forget, this is the same people that want to pay Correa for 10 years. After 5 years, they're going to be the ones bitching about the fact that there's no room to move, there's no financial flexibility, and this sucks. Well, it's the same people that are now saying they really screwed up and they never got the starting pitching they needed, and this is why this team was never going to win the World Series. You know what? You're full of you-know-what, and you were fine with it when Lance McCullers was still pitching and Fromber's ERA was under 320, and everybody was fine. But injuries happen, and when they do at the most inopportune time, like the playoffs, this is the kind of reaction you get from fans. It's not realistic, it's not fair, but it's what fans want to do. Therefore, you didn't need the kind of guys you needed in the past when you went out and got Verlander or Greinke or you had Cole. This is the kind of thing where you thought McCullers was going to be that guy. And look, all the way through the White Sox series, he was that guy. And if he's still pitching, this series could be drastically different. But he's not. And he got hurt. And those things happen. And they're unpredictable. And you got to deal with it. And it annoys me when people think that, and then they also think someone else has got to go, and they start picking on Bregman. He might not have the power numbers he had in years past, and he has been hurt this year, but you know, since he's been back, he's hitting well over 300. He's hitting in timely spots. He's getting the at-bats that you need out of him. He's not the same player because we see him run every day, and we know something's going to have to happen in the offseason, but it's not his fault, and he signed at a very reasonable contract for a couple more years. So you don't want to touch him right now.
Yeah, Bregman's under contract. Correa's not. I think that the tenor that you see, like just following the tea leaves and seeing it on Twitter, like the fact that the Astros now, and it's recency bias, it's being a prisoner of the moment. The last two games, and really the last three games, and really the whole playoffs outside of Lance McCullers, the starting pitching has been terrible. It was good in the regular season. It's been terrible in the postseason. And you're starting to see that tenor change a little bit. Let Correa walk. Sign some starting pitchers, and it shows you how fickle fans can be at times, which, you know, you can understand, too, because it is the reason the Astros are currently trailing 2-1 in the ALCS.
The good news, though, is they're in a position of strength financially, regardless of what they do with Correa, because you're getting Verlander and Greinke off the books. So you're going to have roughly $60 million to play with there. Then if Correa walks away, you have whatever you were paying him this year in terms of extra money on top of that, where you can allocate it as you see fit to try and add to this team. You're going to have to replace Correa if he leaves as well. I don't think Rolando was thinking about that. You know, you're looking at subtraction, but you need addition to replace the guy, at least one guy that's going to leave, yep. and then use the money of the other two that's going to go away.
I think Rolando was saying keep Correa and then sign yep. starting pitching and then to clear up money by trading Alex Bregman. One thing that bothers me, by the way, if I can vent a little bit, is whenever people start saying, well, it's not your money, why do you care how the Astros spend it? Well, Jim Crane's going to go right up to the luxury tax threshold, right? Like, he's probably not going to go over it. It's probably around $210 million. So it's not a conversation of how other people spend their money. It's how you think is best suited to spend the $210 million. Like, everybody can make the assumption, and I think it's a fair assumption to make, that Crane's going to spend up to the luxury mm-hmm. tax. So if you have one player taking a huge chunk of the $210 million of payroll, it's going to change how the rest of the team is altered. So I hate the conversation of, well, who cares? It's not your money. No, but you want to construct $210 exactly. million dollars worth of payroll and how you think it's best suited.
As an astute fan of this team being my favorite team, it's not my money, but I care how they spend it because I want them to be competitive.
Yes.
If I just threw money at the wall at every Tom, Dick, and Harry that had a decent year and said, you got to keep him and you got to keep him too and you got to keep him too, and at a certain point you're going to realize the money runs out, so does the performance level of the guys you're throwing all the money at, and then you're screwed for multiple years, and we've talked about that. So you know what? It may not be my money, but being a caring fan of this team and wanting them to do well, I want them to make smart financial decisions that affect this team positively, not negatively.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We can keep talking Astros if you'd like. Also, we'll take a look at the Monday night football game from yesterday, Titans and Bills. We'll do it both when we return. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
713-780-3776, number to call, number to text. Let's go straight out to the HRMP listener line. Chris, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, what's going on, Killer Bees? Hey, listen, I know you guys are saying it's only 2-1, but it feels like it's, we're losing the series 2-1, but it feels like 10-1 right now. I just feel like, what does Dusty have to lose by really shaking up his batting order? You know, I feel like he really needs to shake up the batting order, and I wanted to ask you guys a question. I mean, how much is it in the decision-making process for Dusty that he considers their egos, he considers how long they've been in the league, you know, before he changes them in the order, rather than just saying, you know what, I'm going to do what's best for the team and damn their egos. I mean, how much of that goes into it? Like, will Brantley feel disrespected if he gets moved to seventh? You know, I mean, do you think that's part of it?
Well, you know what, Chris, I'd like to say it's not, but we heard mid-season Dusty considering who to pitch to and who not to pitch to because of their statistics of 5 to 7 years ago as a cleanup hitter, as opposed to what they were hitting this year and the analytics, which is driving your front office as it approaches every single at-batter this season. So I guess to a certain point, I can't rule it out that Dusty's thinking about guys that have been clutch in the past, guys that have more experience than other guys. But I think that when you look at it, the one thing that I would say about the lineup that's bothering me is now you're not in a position of strength at all. At even, you could still try and make gut decisions like starting Siri last night. Now you're not. Now the ability to do those kind of things, now it's gone. Okay? For as much as I give him credit for the buttons he's pushed with the bullpen and the bullpen doing their jobs, I did not believe that Siri was the right call last night. I wanted to make sure and we weren't on the air to do it. I want to make sure that everybody around me knew that because I felt like you had a chance to take control of the series on the road by getting the first game. Putting a kid out there for the first time ever in the playoffs in a road environment and expecting him to do well and play well. Now, he played one ball off the monster well and it saved a run by making a good relay throw. That's great. But overall, he was over his head and he showed it in the way his approach was all game long. You don't have the luxury to play around anymore. And I think that the one thing, Jeremy, that we look at, and this is throughout sports, when you look at how the pandemic affected sports, I don't think anybody really has dialed down on this the way they should have. But you look at in specific situations. I'm going to give you two in particular. One with the rotation that everybody's picking apart. But we and everybody else has gone to, but in the playoffs, they've been effective. But a lot of these young pitchers' first playoff experience was a year ago in the bubble with no fans, no road games, no hostile environments, and they pitched their tail off because it takes something out of it and it creates more of a focus on what your job is to do as opposed to some guy yelling about your mother and telling you about, you know, where you what you do wrong and how bad you look. Tyler Hero's the same thing. Tyler Hero was a freaking stud in the bubble in the NBA and got his team to the finals. Last year, he was an absolute suck fest. And so the difference being, again, there was no hostile environment. There was no road crowds. There was no momentum on the other side of things and no ability to tighten up as much. That's what you got to factor in as well, too. This is where you got to play experience, okay? From a Chaz McCormick standpoint, I don't think you have any other, you have other choice. I don't think Myers is healthy.
Clearly not.
Chaz has to be back in center field. And then you stack your lineup as you see fit with all of your experience in that lineup. Someone else was saying, oh, you got to set the machete down and you got to start Castro. The Red Sox are going to run all over Jason Castro. I don't care what he does offensively if he gets a hit.
Yeah, if you feel like you can neutralize the running game a little bit, then I would listen to the argument that Castro should start because Maldonado's giving you next to nothing offensive. I think he has one hit in the playoffs. That said, the offense isn't the problem here. The problem is the fact that the Astros starting pitchers have given up grand slam after grand slam after grand slam. And yeah, the Astros numbers might not be good offensively in the ALCS so far through three games. Once you're down 9-0 in the third, it totally changes your approach. It's not really a game at that point. Like, I can listen to both sides of the argument, and as far as Chris's question about hurt feelings, you don't worry about hurt feelings in the playoffs. There's not time to worry about hurt feelings in the playoffs. So if Dusty Baker feels that he needs to flip-flop Kyle Tucker and Michael Brantley in the lineup, that's something you do, and you worry about the feelings in the offseason. And Dusty might even be here in the offseason where he's worrying about the feelings. So no, you don't worry about the feelings. As far as like needing a spark offensively, look, you need a good start. You need a good start from starting pitching. I don't think the offense here is necessarily the problem, but if you want to drop Bregman down because he's not hitting for power and flip him with Tucker, although I don't think Dusty would do that because now you're looking at three lefties in a row.
Exactly why I won't.
But yeah, if Tucker's batting second today instead of Brantley, that's fine. But I'm also not going to die on that offensive hill because I don't feel like the
moving
Yuli
down made sense because he's been struggling. He won the batting title in the regular season. In the playoffs, he hasn't gotten anything going. He did get a hit last night. But those things make sense to me. And those top six or seven, you can fluctuate however you want, but you do have to realize the fact that teams have capitalized on the righty-lefty matchups with their pitchers based on how the Astros have hit regardless. So you never want to bunch them up and keep that in mind when you're thinking about changing the order.
Now, Tucker's pretty good against lefties. Jordan's actually has reverse splits. He hits lefties better than he hits righties, but still, I mean, you don't necessarily want to stack those in a row. 713-780-3776. Let's go back out to the HRMP listener line. Roger, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
I got a bunch of negative feedback.
Hey, Raj! Good call, Raj. You want to join us?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, I'm here.
What's up, man?
My question was, and it's just a pure coincidence, and I don't want to talk about Bergman's marital status or anything, but man, he hasn't had the same passion or same fire ever since he's, said the nuptials and taken the nuptials, rather. And I just feel like that's just a weird, odd, strange coincidence. And I'm not sure why that is, but it's just, I feel like that's a deal, that's a thing. So
Roger, you're anti-Daniela too, or just...
No, not at all, man, because hey, I wasn't for my better half, who knows where I'd be. I'm just saying, it's just an odd, strange set of circumstances.
Now Roger, you're not gonna conspiracy theorize this by saying, by the way, like Correa, Bregman had a lower body injury. It might have been caused by excessive use after getting married. I don't know where you're going with all this otherwise, because you got to remember.
Yeah, I'm just saying, check the timeline. I think he's not been the same player since he's gotten married. I just thought it's just a weird thing.
Raj, but I can tell you to check the timeline and realize he's kind of been dinged up all year, too. The timeline affects his swing.
Yeah, that is true, but I just don't think the fire and the passion, I don't know what's going on with the guy.
He spends it all the way from the diamond, baby.
I see it too.
Up on too much salsa.
It could be the Bregman salsa, which is very mediocre at best. Appreciate the call, Roger. Thanks for listening to the Killer Bees. I see it too. I'll be honest with you. I'm not going to blame it on the nuptials. I'm not going to blame it on the misses. He doesn't have that swagger. He doesn't have that cockiness that he had in the past.
Where is this?
Yeah. I mean, I saw Kyle Tucker do it. Yep. I saw Kyle Tucker do it for him after a double.
I did too.
But I don't see the swagger.
No,
in
he did it
experiment.
Once on the base, but it was kind of like nonchalantly.
Yeah.
Whereas everything was demonstrative before. He looked for the camera at the end of the dugout. He was always barking. He was always talking. He was always on anything that happened good for him. He was just like we said, Kyle Tucker's got the fake high five arm stretch.
Yeah.
Bregman had six different things that he did. He had the walk from the MMA.
The little strut, Conor McGregor.
Conor McGregor. Yeah. He had the Conor McGregor strut. He had the should have walked me four pitch deal. They made bobbleheads out of all this stuff. All of that has changed. He's absolutely right on that.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I don't know if it's like he doesn't trust his hamstring, if he doesn't have that confidence, if he just doesn't have that swagger that he used to have. I mean, he hit 41 bombs in 2019, was second in the league in MVP voting, and I think the injuries have kind of caught up to him a little bit. Like, he's obviously still favoring the legs a little bit.
I think nothing more than the injuries.
And I think perhaps that affects his confidence. I think it affects his swagger, so to speak.
He knows, because there's a couple of baseballs in the first three games of this series he could have beaten out or at least made it really close. And I guarantee you someone told him, we need you on the field. You can't do that. But this is playoff baseball where every single play matters. And so that factors in as a negative instead of a positive, because even if he wants to hustle, they're telling him not to.
If you had a gun to my head and I had to pick a reason on why he doesn't have that swagger and cockiness and arrogance, I think he just doesn't trust his legs right now. And he's so disappointed that he's not at 100% that he's kind of grumpy and kind of always upset. I think that's what it is with Bregman.
I think the other thing, too, is I think as much as we are, he better get it fixed in the offseason. He better be hoping there's a solution. This is short term to get him back on the field, and think about how long it took just to get him back on the field and how many setbacks he had. These are the kind of things like Urquidy's shoulder that we've talked about that said, hey, there's a means to getting them back on the field to being quote-unquote effective players for your ball club to get you through a season. But at the end of the season, there's also a reason why you don't want to go through that again. You need to do whatever medically you need to do to make sure that you take care of it. Because it's like, I just saw today, Fernando Tatis Jr. doesn't want to have shoulder surgery now in the offseason. I've told you how many times. Once you pop out a shoulder once, until you surgically tighten up the joint again, it's going to continue to pop out. I get it, you wanted to finish the season, you didn't want surgery. But at the end of the year, it's part of being a professional athlete. If you want to avoid this being a lingering thing that's going to haunt you for years in your career, you got to get it taken care of.
Yeah. Chris Burke, who we'll have on later at the show, a former Houston Astro, he'll be joining us at 1:30. He used to deal with a lot of those shoulder separations, too. Be curious to get his opinion on that. 713-780-3776 if you want to weigh in. 713-780-ESPN.
He can also break down the pitch count of Little League Baseball.
He can.
Because he's been covering the Little League World Series.
He's a College World Series guy, too. He's all over the place on ESPN. When we return, Ben Simmons, some news on him today that you don't want to miss. Also, the NBA season kicks off tonight. So the three of us are going to give some predictions on what's going to happen this year in the NBA. Next, Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, right now, before we go to the break, I want to talk to you guys about my good friends at Apollo Men's Health. Apollo Men's Health is a company, I believe, and I was talking to Dr. O this morning. Look, I believe in him because Dr. O knows what he's doing. And I like his business plan because he used to work at some of those other clinics. He decided to open up his own clinic because he got tired of being instructed to tell people vitamins they should try, supplements they need, other products that they got to go to, when he knew in his heart of hearts they weren't what was really effective. So he separated himself from all that. He opened up two locations near downtown Houston to better serve you guys. And then he made sure that he and his staff do nothing but honest results and programs that are created to give you what you need to get back to where you once were. Whether it's the energy lacking in your life and you want hormone therapy or B12 shots, men and women, he has answers for all your questions. All you got to do is get in contact with him. You want to get on a workout program. You want to chart your results. It starts with a full body composition analysis. It literally only takes a minute. And then from week to week, you can see where you started from and where you are currently. You want to recover quicker. There's HGH peptide therapy. Want to lose weight? Fat burners, vitamins, all the different things, all under one roof. He's got everything for you. It starts with you making that first appointment by getting online, apollomh.com. When you sign up for that first appointment, you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted and discounts for military personnel and first responders. Mention my name, Joel Blank, free B12 shot on your first visit. I get one weekly. I really think that it's made a difference in terms of my energy level. You can check it out and see if it will work for you. But when they ask you the tough questions during the consultation, give them honest answers. You're going to get results. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, your health is your wealth. Invest in yourself. Make that appointment. Talk to Dr. O and his staff. And see what I saw when I got in there. There's nobody like the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
This is ESPN 97.5.
You're listening to The Killer Bees with Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios.
So Ben Simmons got thrown out of practice today and got a one-game suspension for conduct detrimental to the team. Will not play.
Ben Simmons, you crumb bum.
Exactly. Y'all laughed at me when I said he's going to be coming off the bench. He's not even going to be in the stadium, okay,
that's
in
the only
arena.
Reason why you got it right.
Well, I mean, right is right is right.
So what he did yesterday, right?
Just pouting.
Yesterday at the end of practice when they all come together and do the 1-2-3 Sixers or whatever, he not only practiced with his cell phone in his pocket while he was half-assing it, but then when they went in to all do the, you know, the 1-2-3 let's go, he bailed. He just turned and walked away and went through a side door and went to get his stuff to get out. So I'm sure it was a continuation, which is why he got the suspension. But also from a Sixers perspective, they want this. They get money back for the suspension. It saves them some time. It looks like, you know, we've done all the right things. If he doesn't want to be here, they're putting it all on him. But one thing it's not doing for Daryl Morey is it's not increasing the value of one Ben Simmons, because you don't know what you're getting from him yet anyway. But when you see that he could be a problem in the locker room, that he could be this baby child in the way he acts, who wants that?
Funny you use the words baby child, because here's what Joel Embiid discussed after practice today after Ben Simmons was thrown out.
But at the end of the day, our job is not to babysit somebody. You know, we get paid to produce on the court, go out, play hard, win some games. That's all we get paid for. We don't get paid to come out here and, you know, try to babysit somebody. And so that's not our job, and I'm sure my teammates feel that way.
So he also had another one where he said, I don't care about that guy. So this is a situation where I don't think Doc Rivers is a big fan of having Ben Simmons around. And I know for a fact
is.
The players are not.
Embiid just sent that message. Mm-hmm. You want to tell you about indirectly. That's as directly indirectly as you could go with it. But by saying, I'm sure the rest of the players in this locker room feel that way too. That's not just your 12th man telling you that. That's your best player who has that locker room completely on board with him and whatever he thinks anyway, but I'm sure he's conversing with them on a daily basis, and they had plenty of discussions before Ben came back. And
that
sure,
story leaked. That story leaked from the players.
I'm pretty damn sure they didn't want him back, and they were hoping that it was over after the playoff game last year. The biggest problem you got is Daryl ran his mouth and put the price tag way too high. No one was biting on that, because Daryl always thinks he's smarter than everybody else in the room or on the phone or whoever he's talking to. He thought he could outsmart the rest of the league, and they were like, bro.
We know what's going on.
We're not watching this game high on something with kaleidoscope glasses on to defer whatever, you know, to detract us from what we're concentrating on. We see what the rest of the world sees and the nation and the basketball fans see. It's a dude scared out of his britches to shoot the ball. That really brings nothing to the table for the value that he has on his contract. And you're telling me you need 3 to 5 first-round draft picks and all these other things to get it? You actually are the one that's on something.
Yeah. NBA opens up tonight, Brooklyn at Milwaukee, and then you have Golden State at the Lakers. I'll be looking at the box score on this one, maybe have it on the second TV. But the Astros, Red Sox, obviously the main focus. Mm-hmm. But let's get a little bit pen on paper here on what we think is going to happen in the NBA of this season. I don't think we're going to go spinning any signs on Westheimer or be sitting inside a Waffle House for 24 hours because we're adults, right? We're not going to be doing that stuff. But who is our prediction? We'll start with the rookie of the year. My rookie of the year, Cade Cunningham. And I know Jalen Green's a popular pick. I'm not so sure how much exposure Jalen Green's going to get here, because Cade Cunningham is the guy in Detroit. Here with the Rockets, I think your point's great, where you have KPJ, who's still going to get his, and you have Christian Wood, who's going to get his. So I'm going Cade Cunningham, rookie of the year. Who do you guys have? We'll go with Joel first.
I honestly think, because of the fact that they're going to oversell him all season long, and he actually is going to have a team playing conducive to him getting the ball a lot and getting scoring opportunities, I think it is Jalen Green. I don't think that says anything about the organization other than they got the pick right. They still have to play together as a team to get wins, but I think that overall, from an individual perspective, from a rookie, best suited to go off right away, I think it's Jalen Green.
We'll look at the Rockets more in depth tomorrow with their season opening up tomorrow. Dell, who's your rookie of the year this year in the NBA?
I'm with Joel here. I think it's going to be Jalen Green because of what the Rockets will want and allow him to do. The system will be conducive, and just the way they want to play will be conducive to him getting a lot of shots up, getting a lot of counting numbers, no matter what the efficiency is. And really, that doesn't really matter that much with rookies. As long as he's healthy, I feel like he's – unless there's a guy who's remarkable and he elevates his team to a playoff appearance that we're not expecting, I think Jalen Green wins it. I think – the NBA is about narratives, and the narrative is he's the rookie of the year before the game start.
Yeah, that is the narrative for sure. I go in contrarian here with Cade. My MVP, I'm going with the Greek Freak to win his third MVP. I got Giannis. Joel, what you got?
Oh, I don't think Giannis is the MVP by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's probably Kevin Durant. I think Kevin Durant's coming back with a vengeance because they didn't win it last year, because a lot of people are talking about a lot of other players being the greatest player in the world. And I think that he's got something to prove. He's got the team around him. There's a distraction with Kyrie Irving, which gives him more motivation to want to step up and carry his team. He loves the game of basketball. He doesn't like to sit out either, and that's a factor. LeBron started talking about it yesterday, that now suddenly he doesn't want to sit out. He doesn't think that helps him any. Well, KD's never had that problem. Unless he's seriously hurt, he wants to play the game. And I would say Kevin Durant is my leader in the clubhouse, the guy I would pick. And if I would say if there's someone else or the sleeper or the guy that actually could get it from a tension standpoint, it's Luka Doncic.
Del?
I think it's a lot about how many games these guys play.
Yeah.
Frank, there will be no Kyrie, it seems, until he makes a decision. So certainly it'll feel like it's all on Kevin Durant, even though James Harden's there. By the way, did not sign his extension, so he will be a free agent and be looking for that one max deal one more time for him. So the Nets will have to deal with that all off season. Great. Congratulations. But I do think it's KD, and I think it could be an old man MVP for LeBron, because the talk will start to build. Wait a minute. How many times has LeBron been the best player and we haven't given him the award? They're sheep. The people who vote on these things are sheep, and they run with the flow. I think Kevin Durant built it last playoffs with it. He was one toe away from taking out the eventual champion. He was deemed the best player in the world after that series. I think that continues.
Here's Odd Shark MVP voting the odds. Where do you think there's good value here? You two both have Durant. I have Giannis. But where do you think the value is here? Luka plus 400, Giannis plus 650, Embiid, Durant, Curry are all plus 700. Lillard's plus 1,200. Jokic is plus 1,500. LeBron plus 1,600. Harden plus 1,800. And then Booker and Trae Young are both plus 2,000. What's your best value play there?
I mean, if you want the high value, Trae Young could do it. Atlanta's a hot team, a young team. He gets the ball an awful lot. We know scoring means a whole lot when giving out these awards like the MVP. And I think that from a value perspective, yeah, to get plus 2,000, Trae Young, lay a couple bucks on that. You know what? If they continue on the upward climb that got him as far as they got last year, Trae Young could be a guy to keep an eye on.
You have any value plays that you like there, Dale? I like Trae Young, too. I think it's a good one.
What's Steph's number again?
Steph's at plus 700. So he's the same as Durant and Embiid. I think the value is not great.
Yeah, it's not great. He's one of the favorites at that point. Trae's not bad.
What about LeBron at plus 1600?
See, that's the one. Bad, yeah. I think the old man MVP thing is real for LeBron. It probably will be his, we say that, but who knows when he'll fall off. But it's probably his last slightly past his prime year before we start to see some of the wear and tear. We already saw injury concerns last year. If he plays 65 to 70 games and he's LeBron, I think it'll be very hard for them not to give him that last one as a, hey, we recognize we've kind of drifted to other players in the past, but you probably could have won a couple more. We're giving it to you this year.
Yeah, I'm gonna play both of those. I'm going to play LeBron and Trae Young, see if I can sneak away some good value on an MVP, although I'm sticking with Giannis in our little competition here. In the finals, see, I actually have the Lakers in the finals coming out of the West, but I have them losing to Milwaukee. I had the Bucks going back-to-back. Bucks over the Lakers.
To me, it's a no-brainer. Regardless, and injuries are the only thing that can derail this, but the two strongest teams in the league, everybody knows, are the Lakers and the Nets. The Nets, Harden desperately wants to win his first, especially while he's got all the supporting cast. Then he'll dabble in free agency and get even more over attention that he said he's never had when he forgets the 8 years he spent in Houston when they kissed his butt. I think it's Nets, Lakers. I've said all along the Lakers are a good team with a lot of old players. I think the most complete, solid, talented team, one through whatever, is the Nets. And I think that the Nets will win it all.
I just don't trust Kevin Durant to stay healthy, and I'd never trust James Harden. Who do you have, Dell? What's your finals? Who do you have winning?
I don't think the Lakers make the finals.
Whew. Who does then?
He's getting there.
If the Nuggets get Jamal Murray back.
Ooh.
See, that's kind of what I was thinking about, too.
I like them quite a bit. They'll have their four guys, and Michael Porter Jr. is the guy they had when Jamal Murray went down. That's a fourth guy that I don't know if anyone has a fourth best player like him on their team. I'll take the Nuggets in the West. The East, I think the Bucks go back because I don't trust the health of the Nets.
Who's winning?
In an NBA nightmare series, I'll go with the Nuggets.
That would be an NBA nightmare series, wouldn't it? Nuggets,
but see, you
Bucks?
Say they have their fourth. It all hinges on Klay Thompson, because if Klay Thompson's healthy, now some people like Draymond, some people don't. Some people think intangibles have a value that doesn't express itself in a stat sheet. But if you get that team playing together the way they did prior to everybody getting hurt, and you've added a few young pieces that can help, the Warriors could be right back in the mix again, too. I think everybody's sleeping on Golden State.
Well, yeah, health. It'll be about the health. Yep. And, you know, is James Wiseman going to be a contributor when he's back and healthy? And, of course, Klay and Draymond. Look, you're right if you're talking about teams with championship experience, but I got to see Klay play.
But if you just need Wiggins to be a role player, he had a good year last year.
He was better than a lot of people think he was.
And so they've got some veteran pieces that they've also kind of...
I like their depth.
...seasoned their roster with.
I don't love Draymond as the third best player. I know he's like the perfect role player. Doesn't I just have don't to think be he's Wiggins all that plays. Great. And Wiggins is solid. And Klay Thompson, too. Like, what's he going to give you? Like, that's a huge question,
They're
right?
going to nurse him back slowly, but he's been practicing. So I think it's just a matter of when are you ready for the grind of the NBA schedule. Because the last thing you can afford to do is have him go down again.
Give me a quick value NBA champion. Nets plus 240, Lakers plus 300, Milwaukee plus 750, Golden State plus 1,000, Utah plus 1,400. Stop me when I'm going too far. Phoenix plus 1,600, Clippers, Nuggets, Sixers plus 2,000. I'll stop there.
Golden State.
Golden State plus 1,000?
Yeah.
I kind of like Dell's pick, Denver plus 2,000. If Murray comes back, that team's scary.
They lost some depth, but they got the kid from Orlando, Aaron...
They traded for Aaron Gordon.
Aaron Gordon.
Yes.
He helps them. He doesn't have to put up a ton of points like he was expected to do in Orlando. He just has to do the little things. You're right, though, Dell. It all hinges on Murray. If Murray's healthy, it takes him to another level with an MVP at center and the emergence of Porter. But there's a lot of ifs for me. That's why I wouldn't go that far. And then anybody that thinks Utah, if you've been suckered down that road before, last year should have told you no matter what they do in the regular season, what the Utah Jazz do in the playoffs is fold like an envelope.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I think they're a really good regular season team. That's perhaps an over that you take regular season wins, but once you get to the playoffs, don't know if they have that star power. All right, coming up next, people giving up on the Astros, and it's a bad look. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.